This is a special view from 22 from The Spectator on William Hague's departure as Foreign Secretary, with me, Fraser Nelson, editor of The Spectator, and James Forsyth, the political editor. James, we were expecting some low-level departures in the reshuffle. Instead, we've seen the departure, or semi-departure, of one of the biggest beasts of all. What's happened?
But the odd thing about William Hague's departure from that he's announced that he's standing down as Foreign Secretary to go to become leader of the House, and he'll leave the House of Commons at the next election. The odd thing I think about this is how Hague's departure is a surprise, but it's not a total surprise. I think he's become increasingly detached from political life in recent years. I think the defeat of the government over Syria and the House of Commons had taken a big toll on him. I think it made him feel small as a foreign secretary. I also think he'd seen how nice life could be outside politics. And then the return to frontline politics just left him chafing at the constraints it imposed upon him. I think the irony of Hague is perhaps he was too much of a political animal when he was Tory leader between 1997 and 2001 to connect with the public. But he's now got too many interests outside politics, too much of a hinterland to be an effective politician.
Now, that makes sense insofar as politicians can rehabilitate. They can decide they want to go and enjoy themselves and be a Michael Portillo. But William Hague seems to have had this revelation while he was in what should be the most exciting government job of all. You don't get much bigger than being Foreign Secretary. So why wasn't that enough to sort of whet his appetite, do you think?
Well, I think it's a very odd thing in politics when you don't want to go any further. William Hague didn't want to be Tory leader. He didn't want to be Chancellor. Indeed, in 2005, he turned down the chance to be Shadow Chancellor. So kind of what was there left for him? What was there left to keep him interested? I suppose the big thing you would say is what will be one of the centrepieces of any Cameron second term, which would be a renegotiation of Britain's relationship with Europe.
How much did William Hague really have to do with that really negotiation? If you can think of all the foreign policy adventures we've had,
decision indeed.
To attack Libya, the debacle over Syria, the EU negotiation, you can look back at all of these things and not really see Hague as a major actor in any of them. The thing he's remembered for, unfairly perhaps, is a photo call with Angelina Jolie.
Oh, indeed. I mean, one of the most striking things has been how uninvolved in the renegotiation Hague has been. And I think, you know, during this whole Juncker business recently, you would barely have known that Britain had a foreign secretary. It all seemed to be being handled directly by number 10. Hague didn't even seem to be used to kind of pave the way. I think one of the things that has happened is he is just tired of politics. He, for the first time in years, has been telling friends that the international travel is exhausting him. I think he just doesn't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. So couldn't David Cameron have kept him on for a year? I mean, it's rather embarrassing for Hague and for Cameron to semi-retire a foreign secretary. I mean, I can't imagine who he's going to get. Though, if it's somebody big, I imagine we'll be told tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day for good news.
Yeah, I hear that we'll have a very good idea of who is in these big government jobs by 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I think one of the political challenges for Cameron is that the theme of this reshuffle is meant to be promoting younger talent and female talent. It's hard to see who fits those descriptions, who he could make Foreign Secretary.
And so far it's been the night of the long knives if you're middle-aged and male. By my count, we've had 13 departures from government, including Owen Paterson as Environment Secretary. I mean, that was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
I think Owen Paterson's departure is perhaps the biggest mistake of this reshuffle.
Mm.
In that Paterson is a very hard-working minister, but also more than that, he's a minister with an agenda that I think is, that people, common sense people, should like. He is sceptical about global warming. He wants a more efficient British agricultural sector. He wanted to deal with things like issues like the badger cull. By sacking him, I think Cameron has sent a very mixed message about the kind of party he wants Tories to be.
It's also a strange message about, I mean, you know, he worked so hard, Owen Paterson. He worked so hard, he almost lost his...
He went blind, indeed, yeah.
Yeah. So that's strange. I mean, by all means, you can sack ineffective middle-aged white men, but effective ones. But so David Cameron, I mean, basically, as you say, of all the people he sacked, this is the one that's going to unnerve the party the most. He better have somebody pretty spectacular tomorrow, hadn't he, or what?
I think they feel that bringing back Liam Fox in some role is kind of a compensation to the right. Also, I think they will be pointing the right towards the fact that Dominic Grieve has left the government. So that removes the big roadblock to the Tories taking a much harder line on the ECHR, being prepared to consider withdrawing from the jurisdiction of the Strasbourg court, say.
Right. Thanks very much, James.
Thank you, Fraser.